Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Morena, David Slack.
Morena, Johnny.
Nice sort of grey morning out there. Bit of rain, good for the garden.
I'm glad the garden's happy.
Now, David, I guess probably some of the big political news of the week is the government has partially announced, they've been a bit tight on some of the information surrounding this, and the details are pretty slim at this stage, but they have announced new plans to replace the Inter-Islander fleet. What's your assessment of the government's plan thus far, David?
Pretty bloody dire, Johnny. This is a year since she got up and said, oh, this useless government we've taken over from was running out of control on this ferry project. We're going to sort it all out. That was a year ago. Mm. So that's why we were hearing it yesterday. She'd had a year to do what they pride themselves on doing, that is being the government of business that gets things done. And so the expectation was obviously, well, after a year, they will have had something sorted out. Mm. But what she was doing yesterday was saying, we haven't sorted out anything, but she wasn't using those words to say it. You know,
yes.
All they've really sorted out so far is they've said how much they're prepared to pay and no more, and they won't say what that is because they can see that that would be commercially disadvantageous to them, because once you say that number, you know that the people will bid up to the top.
Now,
this is 101, but yeah, sorry, go on.
The plan was, under the previous government, we were supposed to have the ferries ready to go in 2026. The new government has a timeline of 2029, three years later, and do you think this is reasonable?
I'll make this sort of overarching point before we get into the details of it, I think, because it's worth bearing in mind as you look at all of the details, and that is that they are forever pursuing this idea that there's a shortcut, that there's a better way to do it. It's that great Kiwi tradition of, I can get it wholesale, or I'm a smart businessman, I can get a better deal on this. And things actually cost what they cost. That's generalising a bit too. Sometimes they can see you coming, and sometimes you can get reamed. But what was going on here with this project was to make it 100 years worth of future-proof, particularly with respect to our vulnerability to earthquakes. And so the largest chunk of the money, and the blowing out of so-called of the money, was the cost of the terminals at either end, not the vessels themselves.
Mm.
And so what was going on was, because you're at the bottom of Thorndon Key, which is, you know, the fault line going through the middle of Wellington, if you're wanting that to stand for 100 years, you're going to have to spend a lot. And if you ask anybody at all who's built any bloody thing at all in the last 10 years, the cost of building is really hard to stay on top of. No matter how astute a businessman you are and how good you are at getting a deal, these things keep costing more. And that's what the IREX thing was doing. Meanwhile, they had lined up two vessels through the Korean shipbuilders at a pretty good price,
mm-hmm.
and around $500 billion. And the cost of breaking that deal, which Nicola Willis charged ahead and did a year ago, is $200 billion. So you've already spent half what you were going to pay for the bloody things anyway,
mm-hmm.
for nothing. And let us remind ourselves, this is the so-called party of business that knows how to do a good deal. So that part's looking pretty crook. She then said a year ago that she was going to look around with the idea that maybe you didn't have to build new ones, you could get second-hand ones. And what emerged from yesterday's press conference was, yes, indeed, they've spent a year asking anybody they can, hey, can you get us a good deal on a used boat? Answer, no, they were not able to go that way. So, you're worse off now than you were a year ago. These ferries themselves are possibly going to keep on going until 2029 without too much difficulty. But you know, as you always see with vessels at the later end of their life, there's more that needs fixing more often and more delays, and so you can expect that for sure, and cross fingers that nothing worse than that happens. So there's that bit of it. But what you've also got here is Another aspect of the personality of this particular minister, which seems to be that the more she knows something to be untrue, the louder she and noisier she gets to assert that it is otherwise. And that is, for example, saying, oh, this was an absolute dog and I have delivered. It was not an absolute dog. It was an expensive project subject to the normal difficulties we've got of modern building costs blowing out. She has not delivered. She's got no, all we've got is a promise that there will be something maybe in March of next year. But we are not able to see it because actually there's nothing in there. There is nothing to show. And when somebody's largest message is I have delivered, you can be fairly sure that they have they're making that noise because they have not in fact delivered. And the one thing she does seem to do with great confidence is do the snark of a teenager who has been caught not getting their assignment done on time.
Mm. And now the government's decision to establish a crown-owned company to manage the ferry procurement has been welcomed by some. Do you think this will be an effective solution?
Well, possibly. I mean, all of they're saying is, oh, actually, we need more of a process to this than just saying, oh, I can just sort this out. We can just sort this out. We can get on Trade Me and buy a bloody ferry. You actually need a proper process for it. And you know what that costs? More money. And you know what that entails? More money. And this is the way in the end you find there is no shortcut because, to refrain that earlier point, they do forever think that there must be a shortcut way to do it. Social investment is another example of this. They think that rather than spending the money you need on wraparound care of people who are in damaged lives, they think that they can use the database to figure out, oh, we just need to sort these people out and we can save a shitload on social spending.
Yes.
No, it can't be done. There is no shortcut. What you need is to tax enough so that you can afford these things that cost money. That is why other countries have decent infrastructure, decent ferries, decent social services, because they are not haven't fetishized the idea of taxes as some kind of thing from which you need relief, like it's some adult service.
Okay, last question on the ferry here. So there's a general concern over the lack of detail in the government's proposal. How much is this an issue for? How much of an issue is this uncertainty for the freight and logistics industry? And how critical is it that the new ferries have rail capability? Is there a clear case for making sure that the ferries are rail enabled?
Jesus, yes. Because the moment it's not rail enabled, there's way more double handling where you get your container to Wellington, you then have to take it off, load it onto the ferry without a train attached, and get it back off the other end. Don Brave was on the radio earlier this morning, who's perhaps the most reliable voice in logistics as the head of Main Freight, and he was saying, oh, look, we can probably work with this and it'll be okay, but it's not ideal. And he was saying, it does look as though maybe Kiwi Rail wasn't managing this as well as they could have. I'll defer to his greater expertise, but I do think the larger problem was, in fact, the land side part of the arrangement, which does require a whole lot more money than anybody wants to pay. But that's the cost of us living in a country that's so bloody seismically unreliable.
Now onto Rod Carr.
Yes,
David, can you give us a bit of background on Rod Carr? Mark Dalder has done a piece on Rod Carr for Newsroom. Just could you give us a bit of background on this?
Sure. For the last 5 years, he's been the chair of the Commerce Commission. He's a marvellous and articulate advocate for doing sensible things about the climate crisis.
Climate Change Commission?
I'm sorry, what did I say?
Commerce Commission.
Commerce Commission.
Yeah. Wow, yeah.
I need my second coffee.
Yeah. Climate Change Commission, Rod Carr. Yeah.
Indeed, Climate Change Commission. Now I'm going to go back and look at my blog yesterday. I hope I didn't get it wrong then too. Okay, anyway, he's really good. And he's positive, you know, notwithstanding, which is not to say he Pollyannas it, but he says, look, notwithstanding how dire the climate crisis is, we have solutions to everything. And the thing he was saying yesterday, which in his exit interview, because he's leaving as the chair of the commission and the government is restaffing the commission with more docile types, it feels, he was saying that, you know, there are a whole lot of things that we could be doing right now. And it's not just a sort of a question of do we or don't we move on these, but do it right now because it's just in our interest to do it. You know, forget about the climate crisis. From an economic and a health point of view, there's a huge payoff from going carbon zero. And he's absolutely right. And it's all there for us, especially because we're already so well positioned with renewable energy. And we have the potential, if we change the way we structure our electricity market, as far as the price signals are concerned, to do an awful lot more investment in that area, to the extent that we could actually be doing a whole lot of more manufacturing here for companies elsewhere in the world who could be coming in and taking advantage of properly renewable energy available in abundance. I mean, what's not to love about it? And the further point he was making was that the health benefit of mode shift is huge. And, of course, this is a beloved topic of mine.
We're talking cycling, but public transport.
Yeah, exactly.
Why is there opposition? You know, why do you think there's opposition to a shifting towards cycling and public transport?
The point he was making was that you've got vested interests whose interest is better served.
You're talking about fossil fuel?
Correct. Okay. Better served by running out the clock or slowing things down as much as you can. Mm. And I wrote about this yesterday on my blog. You know, in the 18th century, the same thing went on. Slavers were making a fortune out of sending goods to Africa, exchanging them for humans, taking those humans to the Caribbean, putting them on sugar plantations, bringing the sugar back to England, and making so much money that they became richer than God. And in order to abolish slavery, it was necessary for the British government to raise the equivalent of what's in today's money, $300 billion, to compensate the slave owners for being asked to stop doing this shit. And we have the same thing happening now with the fossil fuel industry, saying, no, we want to be taken care of here and we're not going to move until we are. And Shane Jones, for instance, is happily making himself a foot cushion, the better to make them comfortable about it. That's where we're wrong, and that's what Rod Carr was saying, that they have weaponized the argument, the fossil fuel industry, to mislead people about where we are and what we can do. But the truth is, we could be changing tomorrow and we'd all be better off.
One last question. What do you think are the biggest challenges or opportunities for New Zealand as it works towards a low-carbon economy in the next few decades?
We'll get on bikes. We'll be way, way healthier.
Okay.
We'll also be healthier and wealthier if we take advantage of abundant of renewable energy.
Excellent.
Crazy not to.
All right. Hey, David Slack, thank you so much for chatting to us this morning. We'll look forward to speaking with you in a couple of weeks' time.
Terrific. Cheers,
buddy. Okay, bye.
Hey.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.